Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another segment of Complete Wellness with Cindy, the Busy Woman's Cheerleader. This is the channel where women from all walks of life can stop by, get tools and resources to help them thrive 360 in mind, body, spirit, and finances. I invite you to stay connected, subscribe to this channel, and visit me online at thecindyrand.com. Now for today's segment. Hello, beautiful people. This is Cindy, the Busy Woman's Cheerleader. So super excited as usual. I'm back from my sabbatical. So I have the pleasure of having a wonderful guest with us here today. We're going to talk about some things that is of interest to every woman, I think, at some point in time in her life. Nonetheless, let's do a little housekeeping. Our show is being brought to you today by the Leap to End Homelessness Run Walk Jog. It's going to be held Sunday, November 17th at Triple Mill Park in Gwinnett County, Lawrenceville, Georgia. There's also a virtual run. So it looks like here they've got a half marathon, 5K walk, 10K, and a kitty run. All right. So this is being brought to you and hosted by A Grateful Mind International. For more information on this race and the services that A Grateful Mind offers homeless and impoverished families with children, visit agratefulmind.org. That's www.agratefulmind.org. Now, for the best part of our show, please help me welcome Dana Diaz. And I hope I said that right, Dana, because I will butcher a name.
No, you said it perfectly. It's wonderful. Awesome. And I don't need a grand announcement. I'm just a regular person like everybody else.
I appreciate that so much. But let's just tell them that Dana is a wife, mother, author of a best-selling book, Grasping for Air, The Stranglehold of Narcissistic Abuse. In addition to her lifelong experience with abuse, Dana's education in journalism and psychology has afforded her the ability to help other victims solve their conflicts, help them to understand the baseline and origination of abuse and move through it. Please help me welcome Dana Diaz. Yay!
Yay! Thank you for having me. I'm so excited about this.
You're welcome. You are welcome. So Dana, I always say there's a cause and effect behind everything. Yes. Let's just dive right in. Yes. Because this is very near and dear to my heart. However, I always like to hear of stories of resilience. I always like to hear of how a person triumphed over something. And I know our listening audience is eager to hear about your journey.
Well, thank you so much. My book actually came from my experiences in my former marriage. I was with this man for 25 years. He was an abusive narcissist. And I want to be very clear when I'm talking about this, because these are words that people use, but they don't really understand the extent of them. Narcissistic abuse is just when a narcissist abuses you. Not all narcissists are bad. And you take the narcissist out of it, abuse is abuse. And there are multiple ways a narcissist or anybody can abuse you. We all know what physical abuse looks like: verbal, there's sexual, legal, financial. Then you add in the gaslighting, manipulation, the control, the domination, all this stuff. So basically what had happened with this man, Narcissist 101, is they isolate you. They don't like any of your family. They don't like any of your friends. And it's the two of you against the world. And I had come from an abusive childhood. So of course I'm this codependent people pleaser. I'm like that little puppy, like trembling and shaking, like, give me a treat, approve of me, be pleased with me, you know? And I was young, I was just 19. So I fell for it. I jumped through every hoop and I got my treats. He gave me affection and love when I was a good girl. And yes, he would say that to me, that I was a good girl. And when he wasn't, you know, pleased with me, well, it wasn't so nice. But I stayed with him because to me, that was normal. I grew up in an abusive home. So I just tried to fly under the radar and manage it. And it's one of these things, we fall into these cycles, not knowing, because we saw mom do it. We saw grandma do it, you know, and nobody ever told me that I deserved better, or that there was a relationship that I could have with a man romantically that wouldn't be like that, abusive. So long and short of it, you fast forward, he basically moved me away from the city, away from everything and everybody I knew. Even after I graduated college with a degree in journalism, psychology, nope, he didn't want me doing any of that. But see, they work in these interesting ways. We get married, Then he didn't want any children, but I wanted a child. So then it was, okay, we'll have a baby, but you're going to stay home with the baby because I don't want you working. And now that sounds nice and it sounds reasonable and normal, but in the way that he was orchestrating this was for me to be financially dependent upon him and for me not to have the ability to leave him if I so choose, especially with his baby. But what came to happen with that was, you know, things just kept getting worse and worse. Eventually, when our son was in school, I did need to go to work. But he didn't want me working in journalism or psychology or anything that I was capable of. I was working in real estate as well. He didn't like that. He didn't like that I made more money than him 1 year. So he didn't want me doing that anymore. Then, you know, he didn't want me feeling success and achievement. I was winning trips. I was getting bonuses. He didn't like that because he felt diminished by my success. He felt threatened by me. So it was his way, and I didn't see it then, of pushing me down, subduing my potential. Is he said, no, you're going to get this job cleaning houses with my friend's wife. And me, I was kind of just like, okay, if that's what's going to make him happy, let's do that. So I'm in this podunk town away from everything and everybody, thinking I'm doing the right thing by, you know, my family, my kid, my husband, honoring him as my husband. I'm going and cleaning houses, even though I have a college degree and I had a very successful real estate career and all this other stuff that I could have done, but declined because this is what he wanted me to do. And I'm a humble human being. I'm a Christian, you know, like, okay, I'm going to go clean houses. I'm going to scrub floors on my hands and knees, scrubbing toilets. But I'm also the type of girl, like, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it really, really well. And I ended up taking over the cleaning business because people were preferring how well I was doing the work and I was most trustworthy. And I mean, within less than a year, I had tripled business. This was now a little tiny little clean a few houses here and there turned into a six-figure cleaning business. And I had to hire multiple people. I think by the time I left it, I had 8 girls working for me as cleaning ladies. So the irony is, and where there's sort of the story of triumph was, you know, to make people understand the situation I was in with this marriage, because I don't want to get too much into the abuse, but
yeah, there was, you know what I was thinking while you were talking, and I don't mean to interject.
No, please.
And I thought about it as well when they sent me your bio, you know, the information on you. The first question was, why did you wait so long before you got out? So I'll let you answer that somewhere along.
That was a big part of it. So, you know, I think that anybody in any marriage, you know, you get to a point where things get a little stagnant. Maybe somebody's not given more as much effort as the other, or maybe both people have just become a little, I hate to use the word lazy, but you just become complacent. You're married, it's life. You have kids, whatever, mortgage, holidays, you're just going through the motions. The problem is that I was miserable. But again, to me, it was just like another Tuesday because I had grown up with this. That was my norm. I didn't like it. I wanted it to be different, but I tried. And a big part of it was my faith. Because I was born and raised Catholic, and people can judge on that. But the reality was that in my mind, I was raised to feel that once you got married, that was it.
Forever.
You made your bed, you lie in it. And it's not like, yeah. And it's not like I didn't know what I did, you know. I mean, the day I was marrying him, when the wedding march started playing on our wedding day, I remember thinking as I'm taking the steps towards the altar, what am I doing? I have no business marry. I don't want to marry this man, but I was too afraid. I mean, you know, that's a terrifying situation to be in, but I thought that's what I was supposed to do. Our parents are up there. They're expecting, our grandparents are up there. You just go through it. Well, I did, at least. And it was awful.
That goes back to people pleasing. That goes back to what,
right. It is my people pleasing. I wanted to make everybody happy with me. And honestly, we were young and I had this idea in my head. I had a hopeful heart. I thought, as we get older, we'll grow together. He'll mature. Things will be different. And I tried. I would actually, he didn't like to read, so I would read him. I even read him Christian books. I read him, you know, articles that I found interesting. I tried, I tried, I tried. I even went so far, which is sad to me, to type into Google, how to be a better wife. How do I be a good wife? How do I make my husband happier with me? I was trying. And this man went so far as to make me lists of ways that I could be a good wife. I mean, even he saw that I was trying, but he was also trying to control and manipulate me to be what he wanted to be. But he was sexually abusing me. And I'm sorry, but that can happen in a marriage to anybody who challenges me. He was financially abusing me. There was the verbal abuse. I mean, he was calling me an effing C, and I won't say those words out loud, but that was like my name. That was like my name. And I remember people hearing him, overhearing him, and they would look at me just with horror and appall on their face. And I was just like, what? What? You know, that's just how he referred to me. And it's sick and disgusting because looking back, nobody that cares about you disrespects you like that. I mean, that's just vulgar and nasty. And you don't talk like that to people you love. But I thought that I could make him love me.
I understand that. I've heard that a lot. I deal with a lot of ladies through our practice and through business coaching and wellness. And a lot of times, you know, everybody's got their journey. And unfortunately, a lot of them have, you know, those hard bumps. How did you start your healing process?
Well, I had to get to rock bottom first. And that's what it was that I got to the point, right? It was actually at the end of 2019, I was diagnosed. I was very sick. Within 2 weeks, I dropped almost 20 pounds. I was 93 skeletal pounds. I couldn't breathe. All of my symptoms, I was having blurry vision, passing out, numb hands. I mean, I could go on. I had about 2 or 3 dozen symptoms that didn't seem related. And to give people an idea, I coached cross country for 9 years. I ran 5 miles a day. I ate apples and hard boiled eggs for lunch. I mean, I was healthy. This shouldn't have been happening. Long and short, Mayo Clinic realized that I had so much cortisol, which is the stress hormone, running through me at 4 times the highest level that it ever should be in a human being for so many years that it had caused my white blood cells to eradicate themselves, making me autoimmune. So all these things that were happening were autoimmune reactions. And then I developed a lung disease, which is very rare. But guess what? It's common among abuse victims because the same thing caused by the cortisol. And the doctor says that's like having COPD and fibromyalgia all at once. It's called upper airway resistance syndrome. So this all happened and my body was shutting down, my doctor said. And I laid in bed that night and I thought, you know, my own husband didn't even go to me to support me at this doctor's appointment. I told him the results, said my body's shutting down. I'm really sick because, you know, the stress and the tension and this hostility between us. He didn't care. And I don't know how to express that. He did not care. In fact, he was sending me threatening text messages and emails. He even told our neighbor he was planning to kill me. Next thing you know, I decide I can't do this anymore. I need to file for divorce. But mind you, I'm running this 6-figure business. I'm trying to raise a son and I'm trying to manage, you know, this marriage and stay alive all at the same time. Talk about stress. But I was doing it because as women, I think a lot of us as wives and mothers, especially, and then you add in a business owner, you don't have a choice. You just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. So I decided that despite everything in me, I needed to move forward without this man because it was going to kill me. Whether he killed me or not, my body had turned on me and I needed to make a change. I could not do this anymore. So I talked to the 6th attorney that I'd ever talked to during the time I was with this man, the 6th attorney. And a week later, we go into the shelter in place for COVID. So now I'm locked in a house with a man who wants me dead. I have no income now because everything shut down, couldn't work.
So this was recently, Dana.
Yes, this was just 4 years ago. He had actually stopped working several years before that because I had a 6-figure cleaning business. He decided he didn't have to work anymore. You know, you want to talk about financial abuse. So it was a lot. It was a lot, but you know what? I kept putting a smile on my face for my son, and I know he saw through it. He saw it was fake, but I wanted him to have some semblance of stability and normalcy in his life. And I did not, if anything, want his life affected by this adult, this basically domestic violence and abuse that was going on underneath his nose, because he had no idea. He knew things weren't good between me and his dad, but he still to this day doesn't even know the half of it.
So,
So
what are your top three steps towards healing? I know it's
it
still a process because for
yeah.
some reason, and now I understand. So, for some reason, I understand more. For some reason, the hope is that this was some years, many, many years ago, but you're still in the healing process. You're still in
Oh,
because this was fresh.
absolutely.
This was fresh.
Absolutely.
So,
I think healing is forever. Yeah.
yes, it is. It is. But I promise you this, at some point, as time passes, when they say time heals all wounds, at some point, when you realize your strength in
Oh,
that
yeah.
situation, then you'll begin to walk on the other side of a victim. You're not that victim
Oh,
anymore. You're survivor,
absolutely. Yeah.
survivor through and through, not just lip service. Deep down in your core, in
Absolutely.
your soul, you know, I made it through this. Now I can help others. So what I'm gathering from what you're saying is this was new. This is a very new road for you. So by being a new, very new road for you, you basically took your thoughts and your feelings and you put it inside of a book to help other people. But what we'd like to kind of get to the core of, what would you consider to be your top three points that you'd like to make to our listening audience as ways to heal or identify and move past?
Yes, absolutely. The first thing I did, like I said, after that doctor's appointment, I simply asked myself that one question when I was laying down in bed that night. What do
Do
I
you want to live?
want? What
Do
do
you
I
want to
want? Yeah, living was a minor detail, but honestly, I think we all go through the motions, even if we're not in these extreme circumstances where we're just doing. But without any general direction, we're just doing what's expected of us or doing
on
just going through
autopilot.
the course of our life, walking down the path, but without any clear direction or goal or, you know, but you have to ask yourself, what do I want? And it could be something in terms of the greater picture. It could be, you know, short term, whatever it is, but we all have that burning thing inside of us. And for me, it was three things. I wanted to be married to somebody that actually liked me and yes, wanted me alive. Number two, I wanted to travel. He wouldn't even take me, you know, across the state lines to, you know, for a little weekend vacation. He had no interest. I was not going to be able to travel with this man. And I'd always had this burning desire since I was 12 years old to help victims of abuse, specifically child abuse, children that were in an abusive homes. I wanted to help them in some way. So yeah, I saw that vision and I couldn't unsee it. So that was the first step. You have to know what you want. And so I always say it's like shooting darts in the dark otherwise. But once you see that vision, once you know, because everybody has that thing that they wish they would have done or they wanted to do. Once you see it, I think even unconsciously, you start enacting the goals towards it. And for me, I was a little more active about it because I was like, no, this is important. I had no idea stress really could kill you. I did not realize until I was out of that marriage, believe it or not, he didn't let me have a smartphone. He didn't like me having knowledge and having influence from the outside world. So I got my first smartphone towards the end of 2020. Listen to podcasts, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a thing. It's not just me. So I felt that it was important to share my story. And so, yes, I took my journal where I was recording all the things he was saying and doing to me and developed it into this book. And thankfully, I mean, it's bittersweet that it has resonated with so many people, specifically women, but men as well, surprisingly. But it has helped many, many, many people. We have the strength and have the hope and know that there's something more waiting for them. And that's what's led to the second and third books. And so it's really important to identify what we want, enact the steps. Now, listen to me. I was a housekeeper in Podunk, Illinois, in the middle of cornfields. Yes, I had a degree in journalism, so I had that little step up that I could write. but I didn't know a darn thing. Excuse me. I didn't know anything about writing a book, but there's so much access to information out there now with some Google searches, some direction from people that were willing to provide me advice. I was able to publish a book. I was given the direction. I,
That's
you know, if you have the desire, everything will fall into place. I'm so sorry. But I also feel for anybody that's faithful, you also come to understand that even if it is through difficult circumstances, you come to understand what your purpose is in this world. And I never could understand why. Why was I put through an abusive childhood? Why was I put through this 25-year-long abusive marriage? Why was I made to feel sick? I'd never done anything to anybody. I was trying to be that good girl and please everybody. But I never could figure out why all these terrible things were happening. You know, they tell you pray, 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 and blessings will come upon you, and they weren't. But I didn't realize until that point that I had lost my faith in just the will. Sometimes we have to remember there is a path laid out before us. There is a purpose. There is a reason I had
Well,
a degree. Yeah.
the
There's a
thing.
reason I was given my gifts, you know, to write and to have those experiences so that I could verbalize them for other people to learn from. So
Yeah,
it was
it's
really
always a
important to
path.
understand that, yeah, there is a path, and we just have to believe that when it all comes to fruition, everything will happen exactly how it's supposed to.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that you took steps and are continuously taking steps towards healing. And one of the things that I told people, even from my experience years ago, you have to open your mouth. You have to be verbal. You have to let somebody know what's going on. Because it's almost like ladies, or I would say society as a whole, it's almost like we can sense each other oftentimes.
Yes.
And sometimes something that may be acceptable to one person may not be acceptable to another person. So, you made mention of being in an open area and, your ex was calling you, out of your name. A lot of times as ladies, even if we know that, it's none of our business, quote unquote, but if we hear something that is appalling or offensive, it's almost like an eye contact. Are you okay? Are you okay? Do you need me? Because what that person said or did publicly, especially publicly, behind the closed doors, you endure a lot. But if a person has spilled over, publicly with whatever that may be to defame and to characterize you, the bottom line is, you may need help. And sometimes it's eye contact. Sometimes it's just letting somebody hear or know what's going on behind closed doors, because originally being shut off is one of the first,
Yes.
I would say levels of abuse. What that's like the pump and the primer. That is the pump and the primer.
Oh,
But
100%.
the thing is with life, we're all a part, the good book says that he knows our end from our beginning. We're walking out the beginning and the middle, what we can see. But a lot of times when it comes down to what's ahead of us and many of the things that we deal with or go through or don't understand why we're going through specific things, it is for a greater purpose. You may not like it. You may
Right.
not like the path. You may not like how it is you came to learn about your purpose. You may not like it, but at some point as time passes and you begin to walk it out, you begin to realize, I didn't like it, but it was actually for my good to have that experience. It wasn't good. It's hard. I don't like the journey. I don't like what I went through. Why is this happening? Why did it happen? But a lot of times, and I'm sure I'm a lot older than you, so listen. A lot of times,
I
you will learn as you continue to grow and to age that many things had nothing to do with you. It has something to do with that big picture, the big puzzle. I feel like we're all put here like a part of a puzzle. And
A
even
hundred
though you
percent.
don't know what point, what piece goes with which, you don't know if what you're doing is affecting somebody 2 feet in front of you or 10 years in front of you. You don't know if it's your generations to come, or you don't know if it's your neighbor. You don't know if it's a coworker or a lady at the grocery store. You don't know who may come into your path that needs to hear your story or a snippet of your story to just give them that epiphany how to move forward in a situation where they are stuck. And part of the reason why, as well, I ask you about why did it take you so long? I understand the nuances behind it. I understand a lot of times we do things because we want to make the book look good, but we're miserable. However, I ask that question, you know, with all, like I say, love and affection, because when a person endures something for so long, you have to, at some point, make up in your mind, do I want to continue down this path? Do I want to live or die? Or do I want to really explore what the Creator has put in my life that maybe I've not tapped into or explored? I know I'm put here on earth for something greater than what I'm dealing with.
And let me add, absolutely. And I want to actually add to that, because I think this will be beneficial. The key to my healing and what has propelled me much further ahead than I should be right now is when somebody reminded me, you know, I was whining about, oh, all this bad stuff happened because my mother didn't even want me, but she had me and she was forced to keep me and all this stuff. It was a terrible childhood. She didn't want me. She has nothing to do with me. I'm 48 years old. She has nothing to do with me. But here's the key. Somebody said, but you are a child of God. You are not your mother's daughter necessarily. You don't need to be her daughter. She does not need to be your mother in this life. The Lord put you here. You are his child. You are here for him to do his work. And that is the thing that kept me above that victimhood, you know, because I was falling into that victimhood. But then I remembered, but I'm not here for her. I don't have to please her. I have to please one person, and he's up there. And that's the person whose direction I need to follow. And he was laying out this beautiful life before me. And yes, you're right. It was just, 2020, 4 years ago, September 9th, 2020, I finally divorced my ex. I have since remarried, not just published one book, but my second book was published last week. Third one will be published before the end of the year. I am no longer cleaning houses. You know, it's kind of a Cinderella story. I'm writing blogs. I have spoken in summits for healing. I am working at participating in masterclasses, helping other people, reaching behind me to help other people out of that hole, because that's what we need to do, is help heal each other, to help heal each other's hearts so that others can serve their purpose. But you have to remember, you are here for one person. You are a child of God, nobody else. And he will give you everything you need to do whatever it is you're here to do.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. What would you tell your 19-year-old self
at this Honestly, point? I believe very strongly in the domino effect. I would not change anything, because the man I am married to now, I love him so much, and we have a beautiful life together, and I love my son, and I would have never wanted him not to exist. So I would just tell her, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. That's it.
I love it. I love it. Tell me what you do so that you don't become complacent. Now, I know you just left from a situation where you felt like you were stuck and you were complacent. What do you do so that you don't become complacent?
Well, there's a few different things. You know, one of the things, you know, number one, keeping myself surrounded with people who challenge me to do more and to be more and to be better. I always joke that the elderly ladies at church probably think I'm a better person than what I really am, if they knew the things I think and the, you know, snarky things that I don't say. But, you know, you want to surround yourself with people who maybe know more about you do in business, or are really good mothers that you like how they do this or that, or maybe they cook, whatever it is that you're trying to do, whether it's personal or professional, be around people who support and encourage you to get to where they are and who want more for you and want to see you fulfill your potential. But I think it's also, I think we forget to have fun, to sort of play in life. And so one of the big things my husband and I have is that we always want to look forward to going on a trip. So even if it's just a 2-day weekend somewhere, or maybe it's a week away on a tropical island, but whenever we're on an airplane coming back home from somewhere, that's our little game is where are we going next? What's our next trip? And then we plan it, because I think we forget, we get so caught up in the daily motions and the things we have to do, the duties, the tasks, the roles, that we forget to nourish our soul. And we deserve that. And I think that if you're happy, if you're at peace and content in your heart, you will bring that joy into the rest of your, into the rest of your life and all the other relationships that you have.
Guess what? Our quote for today was, people rarely succeed unless they have fun in what they are doing. And that's by Bill.
Yay. Talk about divine intervention.
Yes. That's why I smiled when you said that. And I was like, you know, I passed by the quote, you know, trying to cover all these pieces. I passed by the quote. But that was our quote for today. And the funny thing is, I definitely, with all the different groups that I deal with and team buildings and conferences that I speak, I always tell them, don't become complacent. But I said, listen, if we're doing anything on our spare time, it's got to be fun.
Yes.
It's got to be fun. You got to enjoy it. Otherwise, let's not do it. And so to see that quote pop up for me earlier, it was just kind of funny when you hit that. So I guess it was meant for me to say it. I appreciate so much hearing about your journey. I really do. I wish you all the best and well.
Thank you.
A journey, and I speak from experience. It is a journey. However, you do get to that point where you thrive 360, mind, body, spirit, finances, and you feel that level of calm and balance. You do. You feel that. Not to say that the rifts don't continue to come in the road, but those experiences that you have from what you dealt with, what you endured, and what you overcame, those experiences build the woman that's coming next year, tomorrow, next month, 10 years from now. It continues to build that woman. It builds those layers. So I commend you. I'll definitely keep you in my prayers. I'm so excited about your future. So super excited about your future. And to all of our beautiful people out there listening that hung in there with us today, if you have any questions or want to reach out to her, we're definitely going to put Dana's information down in our description.
Thank you again for tuning in to Complete Wellness with Cindy, the Busy Woman's Cheerleader. Follow me on social media at Busy Woman's Cheerleader. Remember, together we write our stories, share our journeys, create memories, and leave our marks in history. Until next time, peace, blessings, and joy be multiplied to you. Ta-ta.